Sean, I would welcome you back to the East Coast. I'm also welcoming myself back. We're fresh off the Winter Classic. And Sean, I've covered, I counted it, I think it's 28 outdoor games. And I got to say, the Winter Classic in Seattle ranks up there among the best. I'm not saying it is the best. That will forever be the first Winter Classic for me. But I thought it was a great event and really a perfect day for the city of Seattle, the Kraken, and of course, Joey DeCord.
Yeah, no, it's a top five outdoor game for sure. I'm about the same number of you as you. I think I might be at 25, 26, somewhere around there. It's definitely top five. The first Fenway one for a kid like me was number one and always will be. But everything about this was great. The entries, right, with the Pike Place fishermen, the Kraken dressed up as that, and then Vegas. That's the best entry so far, the Elvises. Just creative, well executed, funny. It had everything it needed. If only Vegas's game looked as good as their entrance, they would have been better.
I mean, they couldn't get the entry wrong. You knew that the Kraken had to show up as the Pike Place fishmongers and whatever you want to call them. And Elvis was the perfect one for the Golden Knights, unless they came as casino dealers, which was would have been good too. But Elvis was just the perfect one. And their game did not look good. Their game has not looked good. We'll get into that in a little bit. Do want to bring up that John Hines from the Minnesota Wild, their new coach, former NHL.com coaches room writer, John Hines, will be joining us shortly. I spoke to him about the Wild. So listen for that. But let's get into this a little bit, Sean. So before we get to Vegas, let's talk Kraken. Five wins in a row, 7-0-2 in their past nine, and now they're over 500. They were climbing back. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Seattle for the Board of Governors, Sean, and I stayed there to cover a practice, do a game there, and the Kraken were in the midst of that 0-6-2 stretch, and you could feel the weight of it, right? I mean, you could just feel it, and I also worried at the time. We were 3 weeks out at the time, really, from the Winter Classic, and I worried about apathy in the market because the team was not living up to the hype that it created last season. Well, here they come. They've played really well. Their roll into the Winter Classic on a four-game winning streak and an eight-game point streak, which tied a club record. And then they go out and they win 3-0 against the Vegas Golden Knights, the defending champions. Excitement is definitely there in that market, and the Kraken have come to play. And I asked Dave Haxtell the question after the game the other day. I said, is this team now starting to play to the identity that it had last year, or is this team different and creating a new identity? And he said, this team is absolutely different. They've had to grind it out. They got to play more defensive. They can't rely on the depth scoring as much as they did last year. It felt like last year, whenever they needed a goal, somebody was going to deliver that goal. And that's how they got to 100 points and into the second round. This year, you don't feel that. You don't have that. It's starting to come along, but they have been so good defensively. And they've been ignited by a guy who was completely unexpected, right, John? I mean, Joey DeCord has played great.
He's been fantastic, but they are starting to get that depth scoring, and that's where this winning streak's coming from. Look, Will Borgen scored in the Winter Classic. If you had him in the goal pool, you would have thrown that piece away, right? Like, you know, he's never going to score. So they're starting to get some of those pieces. We saw the game on Friday, and Schultz, the defenseman, scored the game winner against Philly in a game where they came back from 1-0, looked like they were going to get shut out, third period rally. So to me, they're starting to resemble the team that played last year, and Joey DeCord's been really good, and it's a great story. And our colleague Kevin Woodley, our Vancouver writer and our goaltender expert, actually made the trip to Seattle. It's a quick trip, and he wrote the definitive Joey DeCord game story in the fact that, you know, he's waited forever for this opportunity, thought it was going to pass him by, thought he was ready last year to play for Seattle, and he spent the whole year in Coachella, ended up winning the AHL championship. You think about that game, and one of the defining moments is that late game save. I think it was still 2-0, and Vegas was certainly still in it, and Chandler Stephenson, who did our blog, made a beautiful pass to Jack Eichel, and DeCord made this fantastic glove save, toe up, old school, the Winter Classic, right? We're always celebrating the return to roots. That was an old school save right there. And you know, it was perfect. It was the perfect exclamation point on what will be the high point of Joey DeCord's career.
There's a history there between the two of them, between Jack Eichel and Joey DeCord. And Kevin writes about that. You know, they grew up playing against each other in the Boston area. So that meant a lot to him. And he even brought that up, right? He was asked the question after the game, what are you going to remember? What's the signature moment that you're going to remember most from this? And the first place he went was that save on Jack Eichel. And what a place to go, because it was just a great save, and it had Eichel like kind of really frustrated, looked up, looked down, didn't know what to do, really, you know, and looking all around, didn't know what to do. And the Vegas Golden Knights were frustrated for a lot of that game, and certainly after that game. So DeCord's been a great story, but as the Kraken have rose, right, you've seen the Golden Knights, I think they're finally going through their Stanley Cup hangover, Sean. I mean, it took a while. They were 11-0-1. They rolled out of the gates. They're feeling great. And I think some of that start goes back to how they finished last year. They win the cup healthy, right? I mean, they didn't have to. It was a grind. The playoffs are always a grind. But they didn't have to just slog through it. They, if you could have it easy in the Stanley Cup playoffs to go win the cup, they did, right? It's not. I'm not saying it is, but they didn't. They were healthy throughout. They were healthy in the offseason, and they came back healthy, and they started off great, and they were just riding that wave from winning the cup, and now you see it, right? Now you see the Golden Knights starting to struggle. They've lost 5 out of 6. They're, I believe, 11-11-4 since that 11-0-1 start, something in that neighborhood. They're going through that, and part of it, to me, Sean, even watching them in the Winter Classic, a game where you're like, this is a team that constantly finds a way to rise to the occasion in the big moments. They do it all the time. They didn't do it there. Joey DeCord and the Kraken had a lot to say, but I think they're going through the motions. They look bored. And I'm not saying that's right, that's wrong, whatever it is. To me, that's just how they look. And I think we've seen similar things from teams like the Tampa Bay Lightning, and, you know, after winning, the Colorado Avalanche after winning, they just look like a team that needs something. They need a kick in the pants. And maybe it is the fact that they've fallen out of first place now. The Vancouver Canucks are there and they're not. They just got in a way embarrassed in the Winter Classic. You know, they didn't score. They were first team to get shut out in the Winter Classic. Maybe that's the kick in the pants. I don't know. But to me, Sean, I don't know. Do you agree? I mean, they look like they're a team just going through the motions right now.
I don't agree at all. I think that's a really tough tag to put on them, that they're bored. These are professionals. They're Stanley Cup champions. I think they've had a hard road. You know, I spent some time talking with Chandler Stephenson. Like I mentioned, he did our blog. And they've put in a lot of time on the road. Like the split isn't that much difference. I think it's 2 or 3 games. But the road trips have been long. They've been away from home for a long time, like long stretches, and then they come home and they play one game and they go back on the road. They haven't had a chance to really settle. And for the next 2 months, that's what they do. They're home for 3 weeks in January, and then they go on the road, and then they're home for 3 weeks in February, and they go on the road. And obviously there's an All-Star game break in there, which also is going to help them reset a little bit. But, you know, that's a huge thing. When you're on the road, like, it's all hockey all the time, right? There's no distractions. There's no family. There's nothing. And a lot of times that's really good for teams. But for a team who knows what they're doing and has proven that they can play, being doesn't really need to build a culture, being on the road can be difficult because you can't get away from the game and you can't get away from your struggles. And when you go home, you can. Your kids are there. Your life is there. Your friends are there. You can step away from hockey. And the Vegas Golden Knights, who had the shortest summer out of everybody, haven't really been able to do that. And I think after spending a few weeks home in Vegas, I think you're going to see a different team. But the thing that's going to motivate them more than anything, Dan, is they're no longer in the top 10 in my Super 16. They're number 11.
Number 11 in your Super 16? Our Super 16 comes out Thursday. Let's see. Where did I rank them? They were not high in my Super 16. I put them at number 10. They're right there at 10. I mean, for weeks, they were number 1, right? So, yep. But that, it's telling for where they are right now. They've lost 5 out of 6. Maybe bored is too harsh of an assessment. You're right. They're professional athletes. They're not bored, but they're going through that hangover. But good on them, right? Listen, teams go through that hangover early in the season sometimes. The Golden Knights stake themselves a lead. They bought themselves time with the start that they had to this season to go through what they're going through right now. I'm not worried about them. I think they'll be fine. But the West itself has grown, and it's tough. It's tougher right now. It's way tougher than I thought it was going to be. The Pacific Division is tougher than I thought it was going to be. The West in general is way tougher than I thought it was going to be. We'll talk to John Hines. You'll hear from John Hines in a little bit from the Minnesota Wild, about where they are in the Western Conference race. That interview is coming up shortly. But you look at these teams like the Edmonton Oilers are rolling. The Kraken are coming. The Winnipeg Jets have 26 consecutive games for the Jets right now without allowing more than 3 goals. They're really good. The Avalanche are really good. The Kings are there. They've maybe hit a little bit of a stumbling block here, but the Kings are really good. They're the Nashville Predators. I mean, I was doing my Super 16 this week, Sean, and it's West heavy. And I didn't think it was going to get that way this season, but it looks to me that way. And Vegas is obviously right in the mix, but they need a little. I think they need a jolt. I think they need a kick in the pants. Maybe this is exactly what it is. You know, you go, you play a big game in front of a national audience. You're the defending Stanley Cup champions. Everybody's watching, and you go out and lay an egg. And maybe that's what they, maybe that's it.
You are a harsh critic,
Mike. I'm harsh today. I'm tough today.
That's one game. And it's not even a game. Like, it's bigger than that. It's a spectacle, right? Like, if you're judging teams on an outdoor game with a noon local start,
I'm not judging them on it.
You said they laid an egg.
They did lay an egg in that particular game. They've lost 5 out of 6. They're a 500 team in their last, like, 25 games.
They're the Stanley Cup champion. End of conversation.
Then let's move on. Let's end that conversation. And we'll move on.
You laid an egg.
All right. Relax over there. Relax. Let's move on. As I mentioned, John Hines is coming up on this podcast shortly. Marc-Andre Fleury's a goalie there in Minnesota. And if we're going to appreciate things, as we should, as careers go on, Sean, and I want to talk about this in terms of appreciation a little bit later with Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby as well. We'll do that after the interview with John Hines. Marc-Andre Fleury, 1,000 games played, stuck right now on 550 wins. He'll get it, and he'll move into a tie with Patrick Roy for second and eventually move past him, which is a remarkable feat. Remember when Marty Brodeur broke Patrick Roy's record, people were looking at it and was like, is that an unbeatable record? Brodeur's record is now unbeatable. I don't think anybody's touching that 690-some-odd wins. But Marc-Andre Fleury, 1,000 games played as a goalie. And Sean, I don't know that we'll ever see it again. I'm looking right now. Active goalies right now. You got Jonathan Quick has, you know, other than Fleury, he's not getting there. He's got 766 games. Sergei Bobrovsky, 670. He's not getting there. Connor Hellebuck, he's 472 games. He's 30 years old. Connor Hellebuck would have to average another 60 games played. Right. Let's say he finishes this season with 500 games played. 28 more is what he needs. He's got to play another 8 to 9 seasons. He's got to play until he's 38, 39 years old, averaging the amount of games he's averaging. When we're at a time now where starting goalies are playing less, right? They're averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 55. 55 is like the number now, right, for starting goalies. Connor Hellebuck's got a long way to go there. Andrei Vasilevsky's 29, similar, long way to go. He's at 441 games played. I don't know, Sean. I don't know that we'll see a goalie hit 1,000 games again in our lifetime. I think it's a fair statement and a fair question. Will another goalie get to 1,000 games?
No, I don't even think it's a question, because don't forget, Marc-Andre Fleury started as an 18-year-old.
Right.
That's why he's where he is. It's because of that. It's because he's played 50 games a year. He's never been the top guy, but he's been the most consistent guy. He plays 50 games a year, right? And now you're at a point where Marc-Andre Fleury's not playing 50 games a year, but he was in a position to chase this record, right? He had built up so many games. Nobody's playing at 18 anymore. That's not the way that goaltending works. And then on top of that, the analytics suggest that a workhorse doesn't work, except for Connor Hellebuyck, who is a workhorse in Winnipeg and is a huge reason, you know, that stat you threw out earlier about three goals or less this year. He's a huge part of it. He's the Vezina front runner, you know, if you ask me personally. But the other thing is Marc-Andre's played really well, right? The numbers don't suggest it. His numbers are not good. And I'm sure John Hines will talk about this when we speak to him, but he faces so many high-quality chances. They have not been good defensively, right? When you look at some of the clear sight analytics and some of the numbers behind the numbers, like the chances in the high-scoring highway, so to speak, to the home plate are incredible for Minnesota. And then now the thing that you worry about is Gus is a little nicked up. He's going to be out week to week, him and Kaprizov. And it's really hard for Marc-Andre to play back-to-back games at this point in his career. And he's going to have to do it for a while to hold the fort. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But Mark is going to pass Patrick Waugh. It's going to be unbelievable. And then look at that list, right? So the four that have played 1,000 games and the four that have the most wins, Marty Brodeur, Patrick Waugh, Roberto Luongo, and now Marc-Andre Fleury. All Quebecois, all the first wave of butterfly goalies. Like, it truly revolutionized the game, and it produced the greatest goalies we've ever seen in this game. It's probably the greatest innovation in the history of hockey.
You can argue Bobby Orr as the skating defenseman, too. I mean, moving, you know, you could argue that as well, but yes.
Nobody ever came close to him. Those guys chased each other. Those guys inspired each other, and the four of them went. There aren't four Bobby Orrs at the top of the thing. Bobby Orr was a unicorn. There's been other really good skating offensive defensemen, but none in Bobby Orr's class.
And you know what? I mean, you're not seeing it written Quebec anymore, though. You know, like the Quebecois goalie is not there anymore.
Well, the game's changed and the style's changed. You know, you're not seeing butterfly goalies anymore. It's a lot of different things. It's a lot of the best goalies are hybrids. They've picked and chosen from every style of goaltending you could possibly find. But for a long time, I mean, when I broke into this league, every goalie was a butterfly goalie. Some of them were a lot better than others. And if you weren't a butterfly goalie, you were the unicorn. You were the guy who you were like, well, what's this guy doing? Like, how does he survive in this game? And then the other thing is shooters have figured out goalies, right? Nobody understood the butterfly when it came, and you were taking away big parts of the net, and shooters didn't have the skill to pick those top corners. Now they'll eat you up.
Well, that's the difference. That's the change in the game, and that's forced the hybrid goalie to come along. The butterfly goalie is a dying breed because of that, because the shooting is so good. The game is so fast. The puck moves so fast. The passing is so great. And the offensive skill is so great. And also the fact that how many teams are pushing for offense right now, sacrificing a little bit on the defensive end, leaving the goalie out to dry, pushing for offense, and opening as the Wild do that home plate area, the high danger area, to give up so much. But it's still, back to the original point here before we get to John Hines, 1,000 games for Marc-Andre Fleury. And here's what remember, in Pittsburgh, he was almost run out of town a few times, especially after playoff performances. They let him go, right? Take him by Vegas, takes Vegas. All he does is win in Las Vegas, run out of Vegas, right? Goes to Chicago. That doesn't work. Now he's in Minnesota. And last year he's in Minnesota and Philip Gustafson comes along and everybody wants to run Marc-Andre Fleury out again, right? I mean, it's just, he seems as though he's a Hall of Famer who, wherever he's gone until he leaves, is underappreciated for his ability, for his talent. He is appreciated for the person he is, for the personality that he has, and all those things. But his talent, to me, like, how much does Pittsburgh wish that they had Marc-Andre Fleury in the past few years, right? They don't have him anymore. It's, you know, like, Vegas goes and they win it with Adin Hill. Marc-Andre Fleury's still there. He'd probably be the guy. And they would win it with him instead, right? It's and then in Minnesota, like, Gustafson comes along. It's just like, well, all right, we're going to play him over Fleury. He seems to be his talent seems to be underappreciated for a long time. Yet he's a Hall of Famer, no question about it. He's one of the best goalies in the history of the game.
I think you've forgotten that there's a salary cap in this league.
Yeah.
He wasn't run out of towns.
He was run out of Vegas. There is no question about it.
They couldn't afford both goalies.
They didn't need both. They had a good one.
No, they couldn't afford both, and that's why he's gone. But the reason that Marc-Andre Fleury played 1,000 games, and we're going to get to John Hines in a minute, I'm sure he can elaborate even more, is because of those things you talked about, his personality, his ability to let bad games go, his ability to adapt when things didn't go right. He didn't want to leave Pittsburgh. It would have ruined a lot of goalies, and all he did was he went to another town, an expansion town, and brought him to the Stanley Cup final. And a lot of that was because he set the tone for that team, right? And the most amazing thing, I think, when you look at goalies today, none of them stay healthy. Marc-Andre stayed healthy his whole career. He was unbelievably reliable and consistent. And that's what's going to define his career, which is a Hall of Fame career. There's no doubt about it.
No question about it. All right, well, we teased it enough. So let's get to that interview with John Hines, new coach of the Minnesota Wild. Here it is. Thanks so much for joining us. Unfortunately, Sean had to step out, wasn't available, but he sends his Rhode Island regards, if you will.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. So, all right, let's go big picture here first. How's this been for you since you got there in Minnesota? The team's won a bunch of games, lost a few here now. What's your just overall take on where the Wild are at this point under you now?
Yeah, you know, it's always challenging when you come in season just because you're kind of jumping on a moving train. And I think my experience in Nashville helped being able to come in season and just some of the things that, you know, you recognize that the team is going through. Usually when you come in season, obviously something hasn't gone on the right way, whatever that may have been. And then, you know, it's the same thing when you get the job in the summer, but the difference is you have time to get to know people's plan, some things. When you come into the new job, you're really, you know, jumping in, you're really concerned about the players and the team and getting to know those guys, and also trying to, as fast as you can, as much as you can, get them to get to know you, not just as the coach, but just kind of your personality and who you are. And then it's the same thing with the, you know, the assistant coaches and the training staff. So that was a little bit of a whirlwind, but it's been really enjoyable. You know, coming into the team, it's a great group of players. You know, there's a great mix of veterans, talent, young players, but I think the dressing room is really good. It's a tight knit group of guys. They're coachable. They're enjoyable to be around. You know, the assistant coaches have been excellent, very helpful and helping me get acclimated, but, you know, good, sharp coaches run good meetings. So, you know, the transition has been really, really good because I think, you know, there's so many good things that were in place and are in place here. And now it's just trying to push it in the right direction and get lots of consistency to the way that we're going about our business.
What did you find, though, when you got there? Did you find a team that was just lacking confidence? Like, what was it that you saw that you could immediately put your finger on? Not necessarily of I got to fix this, but just the mindset and that mood of the team when you took over.
Yeah, you know, one, you could coming in and just talking with Billy that day and the assistant coaches for a long time before I met the team was, you know, the words that came out was they are lacking confidence. They care. It's a good group. There's no locker room issues. And they were hurt. You know, they were hurt from, I think, what had gone on record wise, you know, whether that was as a team, you know, when you get in, when you don't have a lot of winning, you know, particularly early in the year, it's hard to get that confidence and belief in themselves. So that was one, you know, and then the other thing was I think that they were, you know, they truly were disappointed that they lost two good coaches and Bob and Dean you know, coming in as a new coach and recognizing that, you know, those guys have done a lot of good things here as coaches. I think that the players and the staff, lots of times there's, you know, coaches do a lot of good things for people and really trying to respect that relationship and what those guys had done, but also how are we going to move forward together? And that was really what the focus was going to be.
So here you are now, let's fast forward to right now. You've won 11 of 17 games since you've took over, but I mean, now you're playing without Gustafsson, Kaprizov, Zuccarello, Rodin. These are staples. These are guys that, you know, their game. Right. I mean, you coached against them. Now you've coached them. So, you know, their game. You have to bring in players here who, if you had a training camp with them, you'd have a better understanding of exactly what they do. Describe that challenge now that you're facing as a coach with these injuries, which we know the challenge of those injuries for the team. But as a coach, just trying to integrate guys who you may have to figure out on the fly.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, that is a challenge. You know, I think it was when I first came in, we were pretty healthy and, you know, the team really took off and you could see, you know, how much potential the team has. But now, you know, we've been riddled with injuries, as you said, and we've lost, you know, some staples of the team, not only really good players for us, but voices in the locker room, voices on the bench, guys in leadership roles. And now you're bringing in new players. So you have to really rely on, you know, the management and the assistant coaches that are here that have had eyes on these guys and understand their skill sets, where they can play, what they can do. And then the challenge on my part is you have to listen to all that information. And then when you're actually coaching in the games, it's are they bringing those attributes that, you know, the reason why they get called up or what other people have seen in them and what those players have, are they executing those at a level that's going to help us win games?
Right. I don't imagine. I mean, if you have training camp with guys, you know who's close, who was on the cusp, things along those lines. You have firsthand knowledge of it. Now you're relying on the others. But does it happen quickly for you? Do you think that you just, as the game flows, you kind of figure it out as the game flows?
Yeah, I think as the game flows and then lots of times even game to game, you kind of see – you know, what they can do, what their skill sets are. And as I said, I think maybe some guys that they may work well with, you know, we've tried to keep some pairs together and then we've added in some newer players in there. But, you know, so far, I think that the information that I've gotten from the assistant coaches and from management on these guys has been accurate, which again has been helpful. You know, you can come in and sometimes it's tough to turn something around fairly quickly, which we've been able to do. But a lot of that is you know, you have good help around you.
Kaprizov, just in general, you coached against him enough to know exactly how good he is. Coaching a player, you gain a better appreciation. It's been a short period of time. But in your mind now that you're coaching him, what makes this guy so good?
Well, he's, you know, coaching against him, you see him a few times a year. And obviously, you see what he can do. We all see what he can do. But you know, having the opportunity to coach him, you know, day in and day out, see how he practices, what he can do in practice, the skill set, his drive, his hunger to get better every day. You know, he's one of the first guys on, one of the last guys off, practices at a high tempo. And then you see him game in and game out, just his willingness. You know, what I didn't know so much is really the person. You know, you see the talent, but what's behind the talent? And he's a special, like he's really fun to be around. He's coachable. He's been hungry. He's a great teammate. And those are all things that as you come in as a new coach, you're like, wow, I got a player of this caliber and this skill set. And he's the total package as far as, you know, the person that you want, part of our team leadership as an assistant captain. And then you just see how he is around his team. You know, he's an egoless guy, but he's a tremendous, the thing I've seen the most is just his how competitive he is and his drive to want to win.
It's early. It's a small sample size, but is he the most talented player you've coached in the National Hockey League?
He's right up there, you know, probably, I've had some great players in Nashville. Obviously, I think Yossi's up there. You know, you had guys like, you know, Taylor Hall, his Hart Trophy winning year. And just, yep. You know, he's of similar ilk of high, high talent, high, high drive, and the ability to influence a game.
How about Marc-Andre Fleury? Sean and I have talked about this, about a guy who, a goalie and 1,000 games. And we may never see it again.
Yeah.
Is there a different level of appreciation? Should there be a different level of appreciation for Marc-Andre Fleury now that he's reached that milestone, surpassed that milestone? He's going to pass Patrick Waugh, whose record at first, before Marty came along, seemed unbreakable, right? And now Marty crushed the record. I don't know that anyone catches Marty, but the appreciation just from a hockey fan perspective, forget about just coaching him now, but from a hockey fan perspective, should there be a greater appreciation because he hit that milestone?
I think so. I mean, it was, you know, when he did get it, I think he's the fourth goalie, yeah, in NHL history to in the history of the game of the NHL, he's the fourth goalie to reach 1,000 games. And, you know, when you think about 1,000 games in the NHL, you obviously know you're an elite talent, but to get there when you, have the opportunity to get to coach him even at this stage in his career. His love of the game, great teammate, being around the locker room, like you can just tell this is what brings him the most joy is being a hockey player and being around the team. And, I think there's probably in all our lifetimes, you're going to see special people, special players, in the game. And Marc-Andre is certainly one of those guys. And, as we said, even after his style of his game, he's obviously a tremendous player and all the accolades he's had on the ice. But probably more importantly, he's even a better person. And that's what makes him such a special guy.
And now, though, with Gustafson out for a little bit, you got to ride him, too. Is he capable of that in your mind to where you can play him back-to-back? You can play him as much as you might need to play him here in the next couple of weeks as you await the return of Filip Gustafson?
Yeah, I think so. Some of it is, he keeps himself in excellent shape, which is I think critical going in from not playing as much to then going into that main starting role night in and night out. I think the schedule lends itself to it early here for us to be able to manage him the right way. I think there's got to be days off in between games, get what he needs in the morning. But I think give him the opportunity to rest physically and mentally the days in between games. And some days he doesn't have to practice, but it's getting himself and giving him the opportunity physically and mentally to be ready to be at his best night in and night out. And I think if we can manage that the right way and Marc-Andre is on board with that and manages his time the right way, then he certainly has the talent and the ability and the competitiveness to win games for us.
One more, John, before I let you go. You recently played him twice, the Winnipeg Jets. This is a team right now, 26 consecutive games they've gone without allowing more than 3 goals in a game. What did you see from the Jets in those 2 games? They beat you twice. What did you see just coaching against them on why they have been that way?
Well, I see a team that's really, really bought in to play a real strong team game. It looks throughout their lineup that they're willing to play the right way on both sides of the puck. They compete from an offensive perspective. But I think they're, in their checking game throughout their 4 lines and their 6D, there's a commitment to check, line rush defense. They defend hard in the hard areas of the game from a defensive standpoint, and that I think helps where there's a lot of buy-in. They're playing really well as a 5-man unit. And I think they respect how hard you have to play without the puck to win. Well, to win at the rate that they've won in the league. And then I think then on top of that, you back that up with the type of goaltending that they've gotten with Hellebuck. And then even in our game, Brassois played really well. So I think they're, they have right now the total package of, their 5-on-5 play. Their team defense is really committed. They're playing a strong team game and they're backboned by very good goaltending.
Kind of the model of what you want to be in a sample size, right?
Yeah,
in a
for sure.
Sample size. You're the best. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Always a pleasure hanging with you.
Great stuff there with John Hines. Like I said, former NHL.com writer, John Hines. Just another coach who did Coach's Room, who got a job. Just come to us. You'll get a job. Do Coach's Room, you get a job. Anyway.
Especially if Dan Rosen ghostwrites it.
That's right. That's 100% right. You are not telling a lie.
100% placement.
Exactly. I think I am 100% on this. I think I'm batting 1,000 on this. I really do. Anyway, we were talking about appreciation. We were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury before that interview with John Hines. Let's appreciate Connor McDavid now. 900 points. Fifth fastest player to 900 points. We know how good he is. We see it every night, right? I mean, the guy's up to 53 points this season. He could easily win the scoring race yet again. Fifth fastest to 900 points. The others on that list, the 4 that were faster than him are Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Dale Hawerchuk, and Steve Yzerman. Of course, all 4 of them Hall of Famers. McDavid on his way to that, to being a Hall of Famer. Can he get 97 points in 47 games and get to 1,000 points this season?
Wow, I didn't even think of that. At the rate he's going, he could. Since Knobloch became the coach, he's only been held off the score sheet for 2 games. And I think he has 10 multi-point games, had 5 points last night, right, against a pretty good defensive Philadelphia team that we saw in Seattle that limited a lot. you know, he's playing like he played last year now for all the people that wrote him off and said, oh my God, he's, you know, he's not what he was. And I think a lot of that had to do with injury. So, but the thing that popped into my head while you were reading those names is he's going to pass them all except for Gretz. If he stays healthy, he's number two on the list. And it's really two Oilers, 1-2 on the list.
But think about this. He had 153 points last season, and he played in 82 games. He's missed two games this season, okay? He has to get 97 points in 47 games. That's a little better than 2 points per game. And he could be the third player in NHL history to get to 900 and 1,000 in the same season. Phil Esposito and Mario Lemieux did it. Connor McDavid could do it. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility with the way he's playing. It's a long shot. It gives him a 160-point season. It would be the best season he's ever had. So I say it's a long shot. Absolutely. But if somebody's going to do it, he's going to be the one to do it. It seems to me that it's very clear, Sean, that he was banged up earlier in the season. And the losing probably got to him a little bit as well. That team is 14-3 in their last 17 games. McDavid is absolutely rolling. I don't think that he stops. I don't see how he slows down. I think the Oilers are on the rise. They figured something out here, you know, in terms of how the appropriate way to play. They're on the rise. McDavid looks unstoppable. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he does it. That he gets 97 in 47 games if he stays healthy. And he gets to 160 points this season. And that puts him at 1,000 points for his career.
That'd be a great story. I'd love to see that happen. Look, he's been really good, and Edmonton has figured it out. They figured out how to play defense a little bit. I'm going to tell you another team that better figure it out, and they better figure it out quick, and that's on the other side of Canada, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're not a good hockey team. I know they won last night. I know they beat an LA team that we've been singing the praises of, who I had at number one recently in our power rankings, but they haven't played well. But still, to beat LA on the road is a feather in your cap. But there's been some other games lately where you just look at this Toronto team and you wonder what's going to happen. Samsonov sent away, put on waivers. He's not playing. They don't want him to play. They want him to go get his head straight. Their goaltending is Martin Jones and who knows what. There's nothing behind it. Defensively, they're not very good. Offensively, they're great, right? Auston Matthews is having a fantastic year. Nylander, all of those guys. But their depth hasn't been good. Their defensive structure is just abysmal. And I don't know, as we get closer and closer to the playoffs and teams starting to tighten up and points become so precious, how you play that way and survive.
Well, I don't know when they're going to figure out that this is not the NBA, that you can't win with the big four or big five, where they're making so much of the cap. And that's what happens in the NBA. You have three players, you win the championship in the NBA. It's obviously not the case. It's a lot different in the NHL. Yet that's what the Leafs continue to roll out, right? They continue to do it. They continue to not invest in depth and important positions, or attempt to do it and not have, you know, necessarily the right pieces around it. They want to sign William Nylander. They want to sign him before the All-Star game, apparently. I mean, why wouldn't you? He's William Nylander. He's a terrific player. It's another $11 million cap hit, probably, right? I mean, at some point, you have to move pieces around, and you've got to build depth, and you've got to build a defense. And we talked about Connor McDavid, and what a story it would be if Connor McDavid was to get to 900, which he has already done, and 1,000 in the same season. It would be a better story if the Leafs go on into the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup with Marty Jones as their goalie, right? But that ain't happening, okay? That's not happening. Guy couldn't get a contract at the start of this season. They need goaltending. They need defense. Okay, they went out and beat LA 3-0. That's great. But they've allowed, they're 2-4-1 in their last seven games. Just look at that small sample size. In those five losses, like I said, 2-4-1. In those five losses, 27 goals against. You telling me that's a team that's ready to go on and be successful when it really matters? They'll get a hot streak going because their skill is there. They'll make the playoffs, but they're not dangerous. You know why, Sean? They have no identity. I don't know what the identity of the Toronto Maple Leafs is. You know, I've watched them a bunch. I remember when they came through Madison Square Garden and I'm watching them and I'm like, oh, they went and won and they beat the Rangers and all that. I couldn't figure out what they are. Are they a tough team to play against? Are they a team that, you know, is going to grind you out? No. Right. Are they a team that, you know, can goalie another team? No. Right. They're a team that wants to just fly up and down the ice and try to outscore you. And come the second half of the year, that doesn't work. Come the playoffs, it absolutely doesn't work. Like I said, you'll get hot at some point because your guys will get hot and you'll win like 5 out of 6 or whatnot. And that's how they'll make the playoffs. But I don't see them being a dangerous team. And it's the same old story.
Yeah. I mean, they've given up 118 goals this year. Like, it's not a small sample size. You know, you talk about 4-2-1, a 2-4-1, and the 27 goals. They've given up 118 goals this year. The Boston Bruins have given up 92. And when the playoffs come, the Florida Panthers are giving up 94. When the playoffs come and you're playing those teams in your division and you're trying to get out and they want to go 2-1, you can't do it.
And that's who you're looking at, more than likely, right? One of those two teams is what you're more than likely looking at in the first round of the playoffs. How about another team in that division? Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that Toronto beat last year in the playoffs, first round. Are we looking, Sean, at the end of the quote-unquote dynasty of the Lightning right now? Because this is a team, I don't want to count them out. I'm not going to count out this team, that a team of champions. But they don't seem like they can get much traction going. Right. From a run of, you know, about 20 days in December, they played 10 games and they went 7-3 in those 10 games. You're looking at it. Okay. All right. Here we go. Well, they're 1-3 since, and they're losing games. They're a 526 points percentage right now. It's tied for 20th in the league with the Detroit Red Wings. 20th as a points percentage right now. That's not a playoff team. It looks to me like they're finally succumbed to the erosion of depth each year, right? They feel like every year they can replenish. The cap is the situation, whatever it is, and the flat cap, and they've done it for a number of years through the flat cap, and they've probably done it better than anybody else in terms of managing it and handling it and winning through it. I think they've hit the end of the road. It looks like to me they've hit the – I shouldn't say I think. It looks like they've hit the end of the road right now. We'll see what they do in the second half. They got a healthy Andrei Vasilevsky right now, but it's an erosion of depth through the course of years, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. It's too much on the big guys. It's just too much on them.
Look, it's been ugly, and they've been defensively deficient, right? It's the first time I can remember Victor Hedman being a minus in his career.
Yeah.
Sergachev is minus 15. Like, they haven't been a good team when it comes to that. But look, I think a big part of it is Vasilevsky. Like, he's healthy. He's coming off a back surgery. It takes a goalie a while to put his game back together. We just talked about McDavid and how it took him a while to find his game when he was hurt and to come back and hit his stride. And now we're talking about him scoring 94 points in 47 games. I think Vasilevsky needs some time, and I think he needs some help. And again, you know, we talk about goaltending and workhorses. Like, that's part of the problem is you can't give him a spell to kind of figure it out as he goes along. He's trying to figure it out as he gets better. So, you know, I look at that roster. You're right. There's guys on there that you're like, who are these guys? Like, they're not part of what that legacy was, but the big guys are still there and they're not playing up to potential, and the road's getting short. I don't know that we're done. It's a character team. It's one of the three best coaches in the NHL. I give them the benefit of the doubt over all those other teams that are going to hang around at the back end of that race, the 7-8 of that race. And then, you know, once they get in the playoffs, if they're a wild card team, I think whoever is in that 1 or 2 spot is going to be like, this is my reward.
You're right.
I played all year for this, to face this team. I think they'd be dangerous in a 7-game series against anybody, but they need to get there. But again, out of all those teams that are kind of hovering around that 7-8 spot, I have more faith in Tampa Bay than I do in any of them.
But it's interesting, right? Because if it doesn't work out for them this year, I think there's some significant changes we could be seeing in the office. Steven Stamkos is not signed for next season, right? I mean, he could sign any time now. We know he could sign any time now, but they've seemed to want to put that off. He doesn't want to. They want to. Why? Why would they want to put that off, Sean? Well, they want to put that off because they want to see if they have to move in a different direction, if it's time, if this is the end, right? And that would be the big tie you cut in order to move in a different direction. The other one would be Cooper, right? And I'm not saying that would be a good decision, but he's been there 10 years or 11 years. It's a long time for a coach. We see coaches now have really good runs for 3, 4, 5 years, and then that's it. He's been there more than a decade. You know, so there's questions there that if they don't get in, there's significant changes that could potentially happen with the Tampa Bay Lightning in the offseason. And honestly, similarly with the Pittsburgh Penguins too. If they miss again, we could have two of the best coaches in the league become free agents in the offseason. That's a stretch, and I'm looking way too far ahead, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, nothing's out of the realm of possibility. But I don't see both of those happening. I have trouble seeing either one of them happen. Like I think John Cooper's got a really good thing going in Tampa Bay. I think the players respect him. You know, they'll play for him. He's a good coach when it comes to tactics. I mean, you go to 3 Stanley Cup finals, it's not skill. Like, skill's a part of it, but you know, other teams have skill too. Like, you have to figure out how to win and you have to figure out how to motivate and all of those things. And there's very few coaches in this league that do it better. And Mike Sullivan might be one. And you know, I thought Pitt was finding their way. They lost to Washington last night. Washington scored 4 goals. I don't know when that ever happens. and still almost blew it. It was a really good game. But I thought they were on their way. They're back in the Super 16 for me. They're at the very bottom. But they've been having some success. And you want to talk about underappreciated players? If Jenny Malkin's at 1,100 points, I would argue he might be the most underappreciated player in this league.
He might be the most underappreciated player in the history of the league based on the career he has put up, because it's always been the Ovi Sid show when they play Washington. And it was again, right? Everybody forgets about Evgeny Malkin in that situation. But it's the Ovi Sid show. And we talk about appreciation. Let's appreciate Evgeny Malkin for the career. He's underappreciated, no question about it. But we're not going to see the Ovi Sid show for very much longer. I mean, there'll be a few more installments of it. Hopefully, there will be several more installments of it. Hey, maybe we'll get a playoff series out of it again. Those have been legendary, right? But that was the 67th head-to-head meeting between Ovechkin and Crosby, and it was the 16th time in the regular season that they've both scored in the same game. You see them getting it down. What a goal by Crosby, by the way. Like, falling down, bats the puck in twice, essentially. Scores off his own batted rebound. Before we go, Sean, I mean, we talk about appreciation again. Like, you know, this matchup, these two guys, we may never see anything like it again. You think about it, two guys that came in the league at the same time with the same type of hype and how they've lived up to it, created a rivalry in the same division, each Stanley Cup champions, 3 for Crosby, 1 for Ovechkin, Ovechkin chasing a goals record, Crosby climbing the points race, you know, just past Joe Thornton. They could open the Hall of Fame the year after they retire and give these guys the opportunity to get in, not wait the 3 years. That's the type of careers that they've had. It's been a legendary rivalry. It's turned into a friendship between the two of them. And we're not going to see it all the time. We've gotten so accustomed to it and so used to it over the past 2 decades. It's not going to happen very much longer. When it does, I think we really do need to appreciate it. And I wish I was flying last night home from Seattle, and I wish I had an opportunity to just watch that game just out of appreciation for 87-8.
There's at least 12 more of these games between them, you know. But, you know, again, you want to talk about appreciation. We're going to have an opportunity to appreciate a lot of players. Very soon, the All-Star lists are going to start coming out on Thursday. So pay attention to that. Obviously, a lot of the big names are going to be on it early. Then there'll be fan voting. And I'm sure everybody's heard about it. You know, skills is going to look completely different this year. It's only the 8 best players, and they're going to compete for $1 million. And it's right around the corner, Dan. We just finished with the Winter Classic, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to relax for a little bit, catch my breath. End of the month, we're in Toronto for All-Star. It's right there.
We get to Toronto at the end of this month, All-Star. The rosters start to come out. The debates start to happen. That's going to be good stuff. I don't know about Ovechkin. should be Crosby. Certainly should be McDavid there. He had a big hand in the skills as well, Sean. So more to look forward to. You can't take a rest, Sean. There's no resting.
No, there's no rest for the weary. And I'm happy about that. That's what the summer's for. But you do. You build up this hope, right? You cover a big event, and you're flying home. I flew home yesterday afternoon, and you're flying home, and you're like, I'm going to decompress for a couple of days. And then you look at the schedule, and you're like, no, I'm not. Here's all these things coming. And we come right out of All-Star, and we go right into the Stadium Series, which is in our backyard. So we're going to be twice as busy. There's no escaping to the hotel when it's over, Dan, and saying, "Oh, I'm gonna unwind for the night." It's coming home and dealing with everything at home, so it's twice as much work when you're in your own backyard. But that's all to come. We got a few weeks here in January in the new year. Lots of resolutions being made by teams across the league to be better and to do things better. And you know, we've made a resolution to be even better than we have been. So the bar is set super high now, but we're gonna beat it.
We're definitely going to beat it, and you guys get to listen to it. Enjoy the hockey.